exciting.
Welcome to PDGA Radio. It's January 17th. I'm Grant Zellner along with Jennifer Allen, and we have a packed episode for you today. A little bit later on, we're going to be speaking with Robert Leonard at the PDGA, going through the changes to the 2023 PDGA competition manual. These are the primary rule changes for this year. They focus on the competition manual as opposed to the rules that impact, you know, on-course play, right, Jen? We're all used to those. So it's sort of an every other year thing. This year, competition manual tweaks, and we'll have Robert give us all of the details on those because we're already getting into the year, and maybe you are going to be in a place where you'll experience some of these tweaks for yourself at an upcoming tournament. But first,
we're going to check in with Tom Shout. He is out in Santa Cruz, California. He is coming back to help run the Masters Cup this year at the one and only De La Vega. A lot of exciting new stuff going to come back this year. So I am really interested on hearing what he has to say.
I am too, but we'll let him tell you all about it on PDGA Radio.
Radio, we have the one and only Tom Shout here with us. Tom, there's probably a lot of listeners that may not know who you are, but you've been around this game for a very long time. How about we start off and you introduce yourself and give everyone a little bit of history of how disc golf came into your life?
Well, disc golf was not the first thing that came into my life as far as disc sports. I was always involved with overall disc sports, distance, accuracy, freestyle, all that kind of stuff. And I put a couple tournaments on. I started, my first big tournament was in 77, and then 78 was a national tournament. And disc golf was just coming on strong. That was a part of the tournament then. And so I've been involved for years and years, and I did 13 world championships, and I started the Masters Cup, which
by did you mean by did you mean played in them?
No, I organized them.
I've organized them. Okay,
I've always been a promoter, and I
gotcha.
I started off by going to the Rose Bowl down there, and mm-hmm. I saw all those people in there. I think it was 76, and why can't I do this? And so I did it, and it was. You know, Stork has always been my mentor as far as I've always wanted to be like Stork. And so I put the first big tournament on in 78. Of course, I went broke on all the tournaments that I did because I didn't know how to get sponsors. I didn't know how to do anything, but I knew how to invite people to come. And so that kind of went on and on and on. And my last one I did was in 86.
Okay.
And so then I started the Masters Cup then. And it was so easy because now I'm just doing one event, disc golf. And so in 86, the first one was called Santa Cruz Open. That was the first two, 86 and 87. And then we formally called it the Masters Cup after that. And it was in April. And I wanted to compete with a Masters ball golf tournament in Augusta. So that's where the Masters Cup name came from.
I see. Now, for those that don't know, where are we talking about
on this
globe? Santa Cruz, California. Okay.
Because I grew up and went to school there, so I knew everybody there, and it was easy to do it in my community. And we had the first course I put in was at Cabrillo for 78, and then we went to UCSC. We had tournaments there all the time for the World Disc Games. And then we went to De La Vega, and they said, oh, you're not going to be able to put a course here. It's too much poison oak. We got too much this, too much that. But we prevailed. We cleared it out, made a great course. And it's really held the test of time. I mean, it's it's still an iconic course for people to come. It's not a big, long course. It's not, you know, ball golf courses or anything, but it's, you know, it's on the list of courses people have to play.
So, Tom, what year was De La put in?
84, 85, right in that area. And I was a carpenter then, so I made these posts, painted them green with little white things on the bottom and white on the top, and that was our targets. And then I begged Dad for some baskets. You know, he was up in Lakeport. We got four baskets, and I put them along the street where people, the neighbors went through. They could see the baskets coming, and we had players that bought a basket. I'll buy a basket. I'll, you know, so we just grew and grew and grew, and finally we got 18 baskets in. And as we got more popular, then we had to go 27 holes because it was just too packed. So that's where we're at today. Actually, we have 29 holes now, and we close off some holes for parking lot and stuff. We have big tournaments.
Sure. I think a lot of people's exposure to De La, if they haven't gotten the pleasure of playing it, is from watching online coverage of tournaments. There's some footage out there from a long, long time ago, but then more recently, of course, the entirety of a tournament, either live or on post-produced. And so I think there are a lot of people who have never laid foot on that property, but actually have a little bit of familiarity with De La Viega and how unique it is in certain respects, like things like the fridge. The fridge hole.
I was going to say, there's so many courses that have, I would say, maybe an iconic hole, a hole, but De La has how many? There's so many iconic holes that have their own name, and everyone, like Grant says, everyone knows about it.
And Top of the World's a special hole because on a clear day, you're looking at the whole Monterey Bay as you're throwing off. And it didn't get aced for a long time. And finally, it's been aced like three times in a tournament. So that's pretty special.
Yeah.
Marty Hafner put a $100 bill on the tee pad, you know, and he lost it.
Right before the person threw?
Oh, yeah. You know.
He put the $100 bill down in one of the. Wow, that's incredible. You
know, that was pretty cool.
Oh, Marty. Yeah.
But.
So, Top of the World, the fridge. I know there's now a few more that have some.
Jen, why don't you explain the fridge so people that are listening that may not quite be in the know?
I would hate to explain it wrong, but there is a refrigerator there. Tom can probably explain all this so much better.
Well, the La Viega at one time was a dump site.
Yeah.
So all these people, a lot of dump sites, people would bring their stuff up there because they didn't want to drive up the coast and pay $10 to dump it at the landfill. So when we first got to the course, I mean, we had big dumpsters and everything that the city provided, and we had massive cleanups and all this. And hole 12, there's a refrigerator down there that we call the refrigerator hole. And iconically, during tournaments, somebody will come and put a couple six packs in there. You know, it's still fun. We had another hole called Chicken Foot, which we had a big stump coming up looking like a chicken foot. It's gone now. As many trees have been gone. And we have Gravity, which is an ace hole, but it's like it's on the side of a hill. So if you don't land your disc right, you're looking at a four. You know, it's going to roll down. Right. It's tough, tough. But it's been aced quite a few times. But
now, you mentioned when we first brought you on, just 5 minutes ago, but I think maybe we were all kind of talking over each other. You have been directing the memorial, and the memorial.
The memorial, the Steady Ed Memorial came in when DGA retained sponsorship. You know.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So then
I said memorial. I meant masters. I got my M words.
There you go.
Confused in my head. I know what I mean.
And we're going to talk about a little bit.
Yeah, let me say that again.
More.
Yeah, let me say that again so we can get you into that frame. Okay. So you mentioned it when we first started talking a few minutes ago, but I think we were all kind of talking over each other. You've been directing the Masters Cup now for some time, and that continues this year. Yeah, how are things going?
No, I did the Masters Cup for 7 years, 7 or 8 years. And then Marty came in and did it for a long time. And then we've had 3 or 4 other TDs since then. And
but you're certainly still involved.
Oh, Tom, you guys have had probably one of the longest running disc golf clubs or organizations around. You have a great group of men that have kind of always stuck around and still maybe not help a ton to that tournament, but you always see all of these guys that have been around forever anytime you come play the Masters Cup. And they may not be hands-on running the event, but your organization and your club have all put work into this tournament probably since the beginning.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we started with, I think, 10 or 11 people. I mean, Marty, Jeff Rockwell, they're still involved. They're really involved in me. And some of them have passed, and some, every once in a while, they'll show up on the course. And it's really exciting to see him, Gene Lytle, Ross Tobias, Michael Lee. You know, some of these names are, nobody really knows them, but we know them there. And it's just grown and grown and grown. And now the club has over 300 members, which is, and they're all paying dues. They pay due every year. You know, it's amazing, you know.
Yeah.
Fortunately, I'm granted honorary, so I don't have to pay, you know.
You've definitely put in your work and time. And the Masters Cup has drawn in some of the top elite players in the world, you know, going all the way back to the champ, Ken Climo would come all the way out. I mean, everyone has been and played De La, I think, who's, we know their name.
Right. Let me tell you something that's really exciting that I just did. I just went from 1986 to 2022, and I got all the stats. I went through every single one, and I got the top 5 finishers who won the most times in each division and the top 10 people who got in the top 10. Mm-hmm. And if you go to the De La Viega Disc Golf and punch in events and go down to the side under Masters Cup, you'll see all these stats where Climo's won 6 times, Macbeth is at 5, you know. And I took everybody from the beginning. I mean, in the senior grands, Stansel never won, but he was in the top 5 9 times.
Wow.
You know, and you see all, you know, Ralph Williams and all these other people that have won all these events, you know, Juliana, Amy Rosenthal then, I mean, she was there, you know, and Patrick Brown has won the Masters. He has more wins than anybody. He has 7 wins in the Masters division. Stevie Rico has 20 top 10 finishes.
Dang.
You know, poor Nate's got, he's right up there too, but he's never got the win at Masters Cup.
Wow.
I know, but he won the Worlds there, you know, so these stats are amazing. So if you get a chance, go look at them. You know, it really brings a lot of history back out.
What's going on now in the present day? What's sort of coming up?
Well, since I've been in Oregon, I mean, I've been in Oregon for about 9 years now, and I haven't really had the opportunity to be involved with the Masters Cup like I used to be. Mm-hmm. And Matt Beattie, our last tournament director, moved to Utah. So everything was kind of up in the air. What are we going to do? And Marty stepped up and said, I'll be the TD. Can you help me? And so we have a CJ and Eon and Sean, a couple other the real solid people. So I'm on as a senior advisor.
Nice.
I love it. I don't have to.
It sounds like a very important title.
I don't have to do any tech. I don't have to get the whole sponsorships. I don't have to at who's playing with who or anything. I just have to implement some of the things that the Masters Cup is cool. Back in the early days, we used to do some cool things. Like I had you get a birdie, you get a buck back. So everybody got paid.
Wow.
You know what I mean? And now they get so many birdies. Like,
I was going to say, that would be very difficult to do.
We can't afford that anymore.
Yeah.
But, it's going to be really exciting. And I want to tell you what's happening this year.
Yeah.
This is what's exciting since I've been back. And you can tell in my voice I'm excited.
No kidding.
We're going to have, we lost the Silver Series. We're not there. And we lost the Disc Golf Pro Tour. And I can totally understand that because we don't have a spectator control. Mm-hmm. We can't charge. We tried to charge admission, but there's no, the neighbors go, we have a road that goes right through the course with the neighbors going back and forth every once in a while. So at first, everyone was kind of bummed out, but this is an opportunity. This is a real opportunity for us to really shine and bring back our history, bring back the camaraderie. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have the pro event, which is going to be the first weekend in May, which is going to be in between the OTB and the East Coast tournament. And 2 weeks prior to that, we're going to take 215 pros. And we're going to take 215 AMs 2 weeks before that. And we used to have the age protected. We're not calling it age protected anymore. This is a reunion.
Oh, I love it.
It's a reunion. And so we're going to have, it's going to, like, the AMs are going to start Thursday at De La. Then they're going to go to Pinot Lake Friday, and Saturday they'll have their finals at De La. The reunion will start the same weekend, but they'll start on Friday at De La. They'll play Pinto on Saturday, and the finals will be back at De La. And no ball golf course this year. Everything's going at the La Viega. And so the AMs and the pros will be tee times. The reunion's going to be shotgun start. So we are going to be able to have that camaraderie after everybody, you know, when the pros come, they come and they drive up for their time. They warm up, they play, they go. So we're going to have that hang out in the parking lot, have a few beers or whatever. And just, you know, have that camaraderie. And it's gotten a great response. And I mean, I called Kenny to come. I called Barry Schultz, left a message. I've called all these people that I go through my Rolodex and I keep calling them, you know, and it's going to be pretty exciting.
There's only one problem that I have kind of foreseen with this. It is unfortunately the same weekend as Champions Cup. So I am so heartbroken because I would love to come and play this event. But yeah, unfortunately, this will be at the reunion tour.
The reunion not one.
Yes, which I am, you know, age allows me to play that.
Right.
So I was very saddened when I saw that it will be the same weekend as the Champions Cup. So very torn on where to go. But unfortunately, I've already received an invite to Champions Cup. So I think I probably...
You called you first.
Maybe so.
Here's another thing that's really cool. All the, you know, I keep hearing the same story, like when the age-based players had the same tee times. We're on tee times also, you know, and we can only allow so many people to come, you know, 12 of this group and 8 of that group and something. So I kept hearing the story, you know, am I going to get shut out again? Am I going to get shut out again?
Yeah.
So what I've come up with, and the club has embraced it, we're going to have 70 and over, and all women have a 3 or 4 day priority registration.
Oh, cool.
Then it goes to 60 and over. They get the next group to priority registration, and then 50, and then 40. Because, you know, I want the people who built this tournament, you know, all our friends and from all over who built this tournament, I want them to come. I want them to be able to participate in this event again. And, you know, and it's going over big, and that's going to open up the 19th of January.
And that's what those of us who've played disc golf for 20 years, that's what we remember all tournaments were like.
Right.
You know, like Tom said, you sit around in the parking lot and you see each other and everyone starts and ends the same time. And just you're there for the t-shirt and have a good time, you know. And that's the part that I think when you master's aged or whatever, like that's important. Not so much the paycheck. You know, we're not out here on tour at that age as much. And so it's not about the money. It's about your friendships, the love of the game. There's so much more. And so I absolutely love the new name. I love calling it the reunion. Oh. I love all the ideas. And I hope that this continues. So maybe next year I can come and play.
Maybe I can caddy for you.
There you go. You and Jeff can arm wrestle or tag out. Maybe my bag's so heavy, you might have to tag out.
I'll do it one hole. Okay. But you know, some of the people I called and left messages with, Stork was one of them. He called me this morning. And he's excited about it. And he gave me a whole list of people. You got to invite this person. Oh. You got to invite that person. You got to invite this, you know. And, you know, I just want him to show up. And we're not calling volunteers. We're going to make them staff.
Yeah.
They're all staff. Cool. And that's another thing that I really am working on is the staff's participation and their...
And appreciation. And you always have so many volunteers. There's so many spotters and so many helpers that have to be there for this event, for safety reasons and watching for rollaways, you know, like no other course. And so, yeah, you have so many volunteers that come out and, you know, donate their entire day every year.
How about this idea? We're selling tee signs, obviously, but on the tee sign, it's going to be this hole is spotted by John Smith.
Nice. Oh, so that's cool.
So their name is going to be on.
That's awesome.
So the shame factor is going to come if they don't show up.
I love it.
But I mean, we want to get everybody involved. I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with Skippy, Kevin Givens, freestyle world champion. He's been involved with disc ever since I can remember. In fact, in 78, when I was doing that first tournament, Ken Westerfield shows up, wants to help, you know. And then Kevin Givens from Modesto with Mike Young. I don't know if you remember Mike Young, but I saw him break the distance record, you know. And I mean, and four other players from Modesto showed up, you know. And Skippy has been still involved with it, and he's going to play, and he's going to take a shift on the pro weekend.
Wow.
And I've already signed up for the pro weekend to be the shuttle driver on the last day.
Yay!
What I love to do is drive the shuttle, you know, and just talk to people as they're coming.
So for those listeners who have never been to De La, the parking, like Tom mentioned, is pretty limited right by hole one in the practice area. And so they run a shuttle from the ball golf course to the where we play for hole one. And so every year we get some incredible drivers that we all pile in a van and take this short ride down the road from golf course to golf course. So it's always fun to open up the door and see who's going to be driving you to the course.
In the reunion, we're going to close off the lower parking lot hole, so everybody's going to be able to park their car right at the course.
Oh, wow.
No shuttle on the reunions. So that's going to be great. You'll hang out the back of your car. You'll bring your lunch or whatever it is, you know.
Nice. So, Tom, will there be any video coverage of the reunion?
Let me go on this subject.
Right. Oh, let's hear it.
You know, we've had alternate sponsors. You know, we had Innova used to sponsor years ago. And then DGA came on. And it was the Steady Ed Memorial. And then Innova came back, became the major sponsor. And this year, they're all my friends. This was a hard thing to work on. This was a really hard thing to work on. And Prodigy really wanted to get involved. Great company. Mark Anderson he played in the very first Masters Cup. You know, he's working with Prodigy right now, and he you know. And Chris Shotwell from Innova came on, and DGA also came on, and it was really a tough one because DGA is our neighbor. DGA is involved. They have people that work there that are involved in our club. And so Prodigy sent us this phenomenal, phenomenal package. They wanted to be on the West Coast. And doggone, DGA came up and gave us the best package they've ever gave a tournament. We have a film crew guaranteed. And being an A tier, I want to just blow Silver Series away as far as prize money goes. You know, that's kind of.
So it's a win-win. You're getting to hang out with the friends and you're getting that paycheck.
And I'm not going to tell you what the AM player package is, but my God, if you're an AM, you better register as soon as you can, because this player package has never happened before.
Wow.
And so it's going to be extremely special.
Grant, maybe you should get signed up there, buddy.
Well, not, I mean, if it's during Champions Cup
Champions
week,
Cup,
I mean,
it.
I'm
Both
there
of us
too.
Are knocked out. You Tom, know, we're going to have to change the date.
I'm going to have to give you a dollar for every birdie you make at Champions Cup.
Well, okay.
Well, it's really exciting, the dollar. You know what I mean? Yeah. You know, I would get a few $100 bills and just slapping them out. You know?
But I will say this, De La is on my extremely short bucket list.
Good.
One of the places that I have not been, other than literally one night in the United States, at least, is California, and certainly not the Santa Cruz area. So it is on my bucket list. I got to ask though, how is the area doing with, you know, the weather and things like that? Do you expect to have to do some prep work this year?
Oh my! Marty said he played up there yesterday, and there's so many trees down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the course gets changed all the time. You know, mm-hmm. as far as,
And when these trees go down,
they're big.
He means changes the course.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They're huge. The root system, like when the tree falls and they will leave it on the hole for kind of like a natural obstacle. Gosh, the base of those trees are what, maybe 15 feet high?
Oh, yeah.
Once they're laying on their side, yeah.
Yes, they're huge trees. So when these trees fall, like... That's big.
Is that part, Tom, is that part, do you think, of the character of De La that it's been able to sort of change and, you know, when weather comes along and changes the course and drops a tree, or when a little bit of erosion happens, you know, back before people did a better uh-huh. job of caring for erosion, is that part of the charm of De La that it's been able to sort of weather along, you know, over the years?
It has. And other people, you know, other people come in and change the hole. We put a new pin placement or something, you know, and that I'm fine with that. You know what I mean? I'm fine with the club, how they've just taken over that course and they maintain it. And the course does change, you know, mm-hmm. as the weather comes through.
Mm-hmm.
But
and just with the droughts as well, you guys probably lose just as many from them just falling over naturally from not having enough water. This time it is too much rain, but there's many reasons.
But another thing I'm excited about, you see my hat right there?
I did. I've been trying to see that's on it, right?
Pinot Lake Championship Disc Golf Course. And that's probably one of the hardest projects I've ever done,
uh-huh.
is put this course in. And it is really a hidden gem. And I'm so glad that everyone's going to get a chance to play this course. We had the Worlds there, 2011 final round there.
Okay.
And when you get up in that meadow, even, you know, during the week you go play, sometimes there's just nobody there and there's just so much wildlife. There's just, we've had eagles and we've had, you know, bobcats and just all kinds of stuff. And the park superintendent years ago planted all these daisy seeds around the right. outside of this meadow, and they all bloom at that time of year. And in 2011, you've seen that it was dry, you know, up there. And now it's just going to, it's green. It's going to be the county mows it for us now. I don't have to have a ride-on mower out there. It takes me a week just to mow the meadow. But it's a gem, and I'm really happy that we're going to showcase that this year.
And he mentioned all the daisies. So there's, if you've ever heard of Grant, the daisy chains up there, and they run their, they have, for a while, they had what, the largest women's group or tournament.
I mean, women are coming on strong now. That's why I'm, you know, I want all women to have a priority to get into the reunion.
Yeah.
And I don't want to shut anybody out. If we were scheduled to take up, we can take 100 per round because we'll have a couple ghost starts. And if we get more, we'll do two flights.
Yeah.
I don't want anybody to get shut out, you know, so.
I will say I'm also very excited to hear, I mean, it is sad that it's not on the Disc Golf Pro Tour, but one of the things that I guess you could say disliked about the Disc Golf Pro Tour being there is it had to be 18 holes. So several of those, our favorite or even iconic holes, were eliminated during the Disc Golf Pro Tour events because, you know, we had to only play 18 holes. So I'm very excited that even for the pro weekend, we will be back to playing De La as we know it.
And, you know, people want to finish on top of the world. I mean, even if we have 300 or 400 people down at the bottom there, it looks like 5,000.
Yeah.
You know, and good shots. They just get all plotted. They're coming down, you know what I mean? Parking lot, watch out, you know, for these these throws, you know. So it's a great finishing hole.
Absolutely.
There'll be what? How many holes in play this year?
Well, that's not up to me.
Oh, that's not even sure yet. Okay.
Yeah, you know, I'm not even sure yet. You know, I think there's going to be 24.
20 something, probably.
Yeah. You know, the parking lot holes, where there'll be warm-up areas for people. So we have to, you know. But in the reunion, that won't happen. That'll be just cars.
Don't throw there.
Yeah.
Well, there's been a few dents in cars in the parking lot.
Or heads.
Well, now that brings me to another question is stories. You know, you said there's been a few dents and few, I mean, obviously those don't make great stories, but the De La and the Masters Cup and, you know, the club and everything has been around so long and you've been a part of it going back so long, you've got to have a handful of stories that, you know, anybody can appreciate whether they know the history or not. And I wouldn't want to let you get out of here without sharing one or two stories about something that happened or something that you saw. You know, we got to hear that.
I'm going to include the World Disc also.
Okay, sure.
Because this is one of my greatest, I'll probably get tears.
That's okay.
I think it was 1980. We put the overall tournament on, and there were people came from all over. And after the tournament, I'm taking my kids. We're going on a trip to Idaho, you know, just to get away, you know, vent. And I got another story besides this one. And I'm coming out of Reno. And here's two disc golfers hitchhiking back to New York. And I can only take one. I had this little Honda station wagon. I got my daughter in the front seat, my son in the back seat. And I could only take one, and they split up. But, I mean, just the dedication of the drive and passion we had to be a part of this new phenomenal sport that's being born.
Wow. You know?
After an 82, after another tournament, I always take a trip after the tournament because I got to get out of there. And I always say I'll never do it again. And I love TDs to say that because if they say that, I know they put everything they had into it. You know? And so I'm up at the Empress Hotel in Vancouver Island. And I walk in and here's this guy sitting there with the tournament t-shirt on. You know, it just blew me away. You know, oh, Ben Affleck.
What?
No way.
He gets out of rehab. He's got my t-shirt on.
No way. What?
You know?
How that, do you know how that happened?
I don't know how it happened. You know what I mean? I don't, but it was all over Facebook at the time, you know?
Oh.
So
all, I was going to bring
all PR
up
is good PR.
Yeah, I was going to bring up the t-shirts. The t-shirt, tournament t-shirt used to be a very, very important kind of sacred thing, right?
Uh-huh.
Do you want to tell the listeners about the whole story, you know, like why they were so important or a little bit of history of...
We've always prided ourselves on players' packages.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's always been, you know, 1 year I gave a watch away, you know, and nice travel bags. And it was different every year, and everybody got some. It didn't matter if you were a pro or you were am or whatever it is. And I kind of miss that, you know. The pros just kind of want their cash, you know. But we're going to do something for everybody this year. And that's exciting, too.
Yeah. So how many Masters Cup t-shirts have been made? Was there, has there been a new one every single year? Okay.
Every year. Every year there's been a new shirt.
How many players do you think have the full set?
Oh. I imagine none. Maybe Marty.
Wow.
Marty, Pete Sontag, and Merle Whitfoot. Those are the three people who have been involved in every single year. You know, I had a business, and sometimes I was doing home shows, and I couldn't, you know, it was the same weekend as the Masters Cup, so obviously I wouldn't be there. But it's pretty cool. Our trophies have always been great. You know, when Braden came on, he did those phenomenal trophies from Africa. It just blew everybody away.
Absolutely.
And I just can't wait. I can't wait to get down there. You know, I go down like once a month for a meeting, and we have Zoom calls all the time, so...
And so you're telling me that the years that you were unable to be there, those boys didn't save you a t-shirt?
Oh no, I got shirts. But I don't have every one. I don't think so, you know.
Wow.
But I have a lot from 2003 left. You know, that was a big,
okay.
That was the biggest event. That was a World Disc Games. That was the biggest event I've ever done. We had like 560 players.
There you go, Grant. You can at least own a part of history. Maybe he can sell you a t-shirt.
Maybe I can get a t-shirt. Yeah, maybe I can get a t-shirt. I was going to say, Marty Hapner, who we mentioned his name a few times in this, he's the kind of person that if you're listening right now and you attend maybe a PDGA major, there's a chance you'll see Marty. He follows the sport closely. He has a son who is young, but is touring now. I first met when his son was on the lead card at Am Worlds. That's his nephew. Excuse me. When it was on the lead card at Am Worlds last year. Uh-huh. And since then have run into Marty a few more times. Every time I've ever seen him ever, he is wearing either Santa Cruz Disc Golf Club gear or Masters Cup gear. Every time I have ever seen him, hat, shirt, jacket, it's all logoed. And I told him if I ever get out there and then I play the course and I want mementos from playing the course, I'm going to find his address. I'm going to ring his doorbell and I'm going to demand, you know, a chance to go through his closet or something.
He probably has everything.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I think he's got the... I stay in, when I go down to Santa Cruz, he's got an extra studio, so I'll stay there. And he's got a little office he calls his man cave. And I don't think he can put another disc in there or another shirt. I mean, it's packed.
Clearly, that's all that he puts in his suitcase when he goes halfway across the country.
I'm glad you have that place to stay because, Grant, I also have to apologize publicly that I stole Tom's bedroom.
My goodness.
When I go to Santa Cruz, where Marty or where Tom used to stay, I now stay. So I've claimed that room now, and I apologize publicly, Tom, for that. And thank you, Whitney and Brad, for putting me up every year I come to Santa Cruz. So. Sorry about that, Tom.
No, that's okay. Anyway, I just can't emphasize enough how dedicated our club members are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot of them that just, you know, pay their dues and that, you know, which is great. You know, I love them too, because if they're out on the course, I love them enjoying it. That's what I love to see, is people enjoying it. But there's so many people just dedicated to this, making this happen. And we've got some new people, some new talent that will be TD next year. That's just unbelievable, professional. I mean, you know, and I don't know, maybe we'll get back on some big tour someday or whatever it is.
I don't know. Like, and I think we talked about this last year, you know, when the courses kind of had to be changed a little bit. Like, those of us who have played it previously, we miss that, you know? And so who cares if you don't? Like, the tournament is just as important and probably even better, because you get to play the course like it was designed to be played. So I don't think that you should ever worry about being back on the Disc Golf Pro Tour. That's just my personal personal opinion, because you guys do such an incredible job running one of the most iconic tournaments that's been around in the sport's history.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Grant?
Is there anything else? Yeah, I was just going to say, is there anything else that we haven't covered that we need to cover before we let Tom get back to work? Because it sounds like he's got a lot to do between now and April.
But you know what? I am calling everybody. I called everybody on my Rolodex. Yesterday, I went through everybody on my cell phone. Yeah. I mean, I want Amy Rosenthal, who I don't know if you remember that name, but I want her to come. She won a number of times in the beginning. You know what I mean? And when you look at that stat sheet, it's going to blow you away with the old names. And Jeff and Johnny Lissaman, I mean, we just got, I was honored to be in the NorCal Hall of Fame, and I'm on the same disc as Jeff and Johnny, which is like, whoa, you know, they are iconic. These guys, Johnny won the first year, Jeff won the second year, and then they won other years also, but I'm going to be begging them to come down too, you know.
Well, I hope
have a lot of the previous winners committed to saying that they're going to try to get out there.
Yeah. I just talked to John Baldwin this morning. You know, he's living in New York now. He's going to make it. Mm-hmm. You know? Bob Gentile, he's not a winner, but he's got Marty's the studio reserve from New Zealand. I want to, you know, Charlie Mead, I'm communicating with him from England. You know, he's played many tournaments. You know, we just don't have that opportunity to see everybody again. And that's what it's really about, is the camaraderie that disc golf has. You know, the reunion players, they're not competing for the $35,000 that given away, you know. And they really don't care. They just want to see each other. They just want to, you know, hang out. You know, what have you been doing? How's your kids? You know, mm-hmm. You know,
good stuff.
Grant, you know, if I miss my tea time on day one at Champions Cup, you'll know where
I'll
you'll
know
find
where
me.
You are.
I'll be in Santa Cruz.
You're three time zones away.
I text Jim Oates with Juliana, and he just texted me back. She's going to be playing in the tournament you're playing in, you know.
Yeah. It's unfortunately one of it is the first major of the year. And so, and I won an invite winning Australia Championship. So I'm kind of already in it. And so, yeah, it's still pulling at me to want to come to the reunion instead.
Yeah, but we hope to see you 2 weeks later at the pro tour.
Absolutely.
You know? And
absolutely.
We're doing a lot of time. We're giving the AMs a little, maybe a priority registration. So if they commit to a schedule for the pro tour.
Oh, nice.
We just want to figure out how to make it good. We want to have enough staff that it's exciting to when you walk down hole six and there's Joe Smith out there, you know what I mean? You can say, hi, you know, appreciate it, Joe, you know, and make, because the staff is what makes the tournament. Mm-hmm. I mean, the players are great. I mean, the camaraderie, all that kind of stuff, but the staff is what makes it. And that's,
well, and De La is just one of those courses that when you get on the course, you just feel the history. I felt the same thing at Morley in San Diego. It's just one of those courses that it's just, there's something special about it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like you guys have always put that special extra in your tournament there every year as well.
We have, you know, I mean, I was absent for a few years, you know, but we have.
But you're back.
I'm excited to be involved again. You know what I mean? I don't know. It gets my mind working every day. What can we do? How can we do something different? You know, I like being different, and I love the shock value. The players package for the AMs is going to be shock value.
I can't wait to see it. I can't wait to hear about it. I can't wait to wish I was there.
Oh, well, make sure you come. I talked. Valerie, I talked to Val this morning.
I was going to say, Val and Nate are not old enough to play, unfortunately.
But I did do some begging.
Yeah. Okay. I almost brought those names up a while ago, and I was like, they're not there yet on their age.
No, I know, but I want them, you know, if they just showed up, Kenny said, I can't play anymore. I can only play one round. I said, you can choose anybody you want to play with.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to
come on down, Climo.
Play poker with you.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the, just show up. And we offered to pay his way, you know. He'll see this probably, and he'll say, oh, my God, now I got to go.
No, Ken Climo, we are putting you on the spot.
Yeah, for sure, Adam.
Is there any way Nate and Val could make a special beer for you guys to sell? I mean,
I'm going over there as soon as the weather stops, you know.
Okay.
And she told me some exciting news, and I can't let it out until she says it.
Okay, good. Very good. I was hoping.
Yeah.
That'll be amazing.
It's going to be amazing. And I like the fact that we're not going to the ball golf course. We're staying at home this year, you know.
Yeah. I will say that course is a really fantastic layout as well. It plays very well. It's very challenging. So are those baskets up year round as well on the ball golf course?
They are. Okay.
So that is also an incredible course to play, and it's absolutely beautiful, and it never fails. There's one morning that the fog is just so heavy, it's when we're on that ball golf course, which is also pretty neat to see.
And here's another cool thing. The last four or five winters have all been different.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And that's what, you know, Daylaw, it's not a big bomb course.
No.
You know, it gives an opportunity for not the big bombers to win, even though Cannon Burr won last year and, you know, Hammonds and Double G won the year before that. You know, they're big throwers, but it just gives an opportunity for 500 foot thrower to win instead of a, you know, 8,000 foot putter.
Yeah, it's all about getting that shot to land and stay right where you want
it to. Exactly. So I remember when Nate and Kenny Climo were battling for the lead, and there was one branch coming out of a tree with must have been about 12 inches round, a big branch coming off, and no branches or anything. And Nate threw it, and that disc just landed on there and rocked back and forth. And it, you know, and then we had the, you know, 2 meter rule, you know.
Yeah.
But he had bad break after bad break after bad break, you know. But,
and that'll happen to you.
Oh, yeah. It does happen.
Good day, lad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Good day, lad. Well, Tom, thanks for sharing.
I love talking to you guys.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing what's coming up and some things that we can kind of look forward to following as the season begins to unfold here later on this spring. And thanks for sharing a little bit of history with us all as well. Some things, I mean, I learned several things I didn't know, and I thought I knew quite a bit about the Santa Cruz scene for someone that's never gotten to go out there and experience it for myself. So thanks for all of that. You are PDGA number 3303.
Oh, I mean, that's what I wanted to tell you. I had a chance to be like in the top 15, you know, but we started the Good Times Frisbee Association at that time. And we had cards made up, and we had, you know, number this, number that, you know. But
so in the beginning, there was actually two clubs. Your club just kind of got,
you know,
overtook by the PDGA.
Oh, yeah.
That's what he's saying, Grant.
I got you.
We had opportunity, you know.
Yeah.
And but it's been, I've had an exciting life in disc sports, you know, and I'm not done yet.
What would you have done if your organization took off like the PDGA instead of the PDGA?
I'm so glad.
Could you imagine having?
Didn't. You know how much work
having over 200,000 members
and
now.
And I'm looking at the I just got my magazine not too long ago, and I'm looking at all the people on the staff there, you know, and it's not just three or four now, it's like 35 or 40, yeah. You know, that run that thing. And it's just amazing. And worldwide, I'm excited about it. You know, I mean, I'm just excited for disc golf and all disc sports. You know, I love ultimate, you know, I love freestyle. I went to the World Freestyle Championships in Seattle a couple of years ago where Juliana won. She's probably she's incredible.
She is.
She won the freestyle. I mean, for her age and everything, to be that dominant and everything, she's just an incredible athlete, you know.
And for her to say that that was always her weakest event.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she is just, she looks like she was made to freestyle, like her body. And it's so beautiful the way she handles the disc. Now, granted, I know she put in
a lot of time,
unlimited hours of practice, but she just makes it look flawless. But yeah, I was very shocked when she said that that was her least talented event.
Yeah.
And one more, of course, I keep going on.
No,
I've ordered great weather for the tournament.
Thank you.
And you know, Santa Cruz is not just a La Viega, it's a destination. Mm-hmm. There's things to do. Sure. There's great restaurants. You know, there's just, you know, the ocean. There's just a lot of fun to be there, you know, so.
And they should have a brand new pier by the time we get there. Because unfortunately, that pier was just taken out by some ginormous waves I saw.
And you look in there, you'll see all these little units in different colors, like right on the beach. I used to live in one of those.
Oh.
And that was really exciting, you know, but wiped out now.
When I showed my kids the pictures of the beach the other day when you guys got hit by that storm, my son goes, "What happened to all the sea lions or seals, whichever? I can't even think right now which one it is." But their pier just is lined with them. And that's what my son remembered when I took him there for the tournament. So,
we'll bring them again.
It's time, isn't it?
Yeah, you could sleep two people in my room.
Oh my goodness.
Boys actually slept on the couch when they came.
This is getting weird.
We can edit all
that
out.
We need to wrap this up.
If you come for the pro tour, I do want a caddy for you on one hole.
Absolutely. That's a kind of a fun story. I probably have two stories. I have two stories that are probably pretty memorable for me. One, as we talked about, being hit in the parking lot. Clearly was, I was on KK's card when she was hit in the head.
Oh, yes.
And that is the first time in 23 years I have ever, the PDGA allowed the card behind us to play through as we attended to her because it knocked her out. Uh-huh. And I will say she finished the last holes and played the best golf she had played all day. So she was okay. But the other, oh my gosh, I'm just going to blank. You're going to have to cut this out.
Caddy.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. My other great moment was it 2 years ago?
Yep.
The Disc Golf Pro Tour came in, and so they had the spectator areas that you could not go unless you were staff or, you know, certain areas. And so some of the original club members had snuck back to one of the other tees, and Tom caddied for me to get back to the front. So he wouldn't get busted from being behind the ropes.
Steve Tupper was the other one.
Yeah. So we snuck the boys back into safe area for spectating by caddying for me. So that was also a very special moment for me in Dayloff history.
Yeah, well, it was hard. You know, it was really hard for our friends not to be able to go up and watch disc golf, you know, and that, you know, we didn't want to be in this ropes for spectators. That was a tough, tough one. Well, I appreciate
it. This is your course. Yeah. This was your course. So
I appreciate those spectators come. They were in the ropes, you know what I mean? But then sooner or later, I mean, the ropes came down and everybody just followed everybody anyway, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good times.
We'll have a good time. And we'll have a good time for the pro weekend when you come too. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. It's always a great time in Santa Cruz.
Okay.
Good stuff, Tom. Thank you so much for spending some time with us.
Oh, man. Thank you. Anytime. you know.
We'll see you down the road.
Looking forward to seeing you soon, Tom.
Okay, thank you.
Always a pleasure getting to chat with a member of the Four Digit Club, Tom Schott, PDGA number 3303. And now before I let you go, a quick chat with my coworker at the PDGA, Robert Leonard. Together, we're going to go through some of the changes to the PDGA competition manual, changes that might impact you beginning in 2023. When you need to talk about rules, you got to go to a rules expert, and I can't think of anyone better than Robert Leonard, part of the operations and logistics team at the PDGA. Operations and logistics, that's a fancy way of saying you're a marshal, among all of the other things related to setting up and running events. You've probably seen Robert. Sometimes even he makes his way on the camera at DGPT events or various PDGA majors where he acts as a marshal, among other things. So, Robert, thanks for joining me. And let's get some clarity now to the rules changes for 2023.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Grant. Let's dive right in. You know, we really the main thing that our members might notice is there's not really that many rules updates. And that's intentional, right? You know, we're entering an odd right. numbered year. And, you know, the odd numbered years are primarily for competition real updates. And the even numbered years are for rules updates, right? Can't stress enough that these committees are run by volunteers. And it takes time for all these things to be vetted. And, you know, rules and competition are I always kind of describe them as a square rectangle conversation. Not all squares are rectangles, but all are not, you know, all squares are rectangles, but
I know what you're saying.
Squares, right? You know, the rules of play apply for every single round of disc golf you play, whether that be at the World Championships all the way down to, hey, let's go play Tuesday afternoon, right? Competition manual only applies to events. So, this year, obviously being an odd numbered year, we are pretty heavily focused on competition changes, but, we mm-hmm. do have a few rule changes that are definitely worth mentioning.
So starting here as of January 1, 2023, we will have some of those changes. And by the way, if you want to see, you know, all of the changes comprehensively, you just go to pdga.com or you check on the app and you'll be able to see, you know, rules right there. But Robert, what I wanted you to do is share with us, maybe in your opinion, those tweaks that the average player might be most likely to encounter and to have to, you know, recognize, oh, that's different, or, oh, I need to prepare for that, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, on the rule side, it's mostly clarifications, right? And nothing has really, quote, changed in the rules for 2023. It's just simple clarifications of ways things that were intended to be that did not turn out that way. You know, there's a clarification in the time rule clarifying about the playing area remaining clear as opposed to being clear. Just a very simple nomenclature update there. Updates that casual areas and relief areas do not incur a penalty. That was implied, but not specifically mentioned. And then something you might see on the Pro Tour a lot that you may not see at your local tournaments is the advertisements, right? These are not elements of debris. Once again, the main thing here is debris can be moved in certain situations. So there is a rule clarification that anything that is intentionally placed on the course during play is not debris and cannot be moved. So you might run into this at your local C tier with a sponsor sign, right? Or a temporary T sign. All those things cannot be moved. And obviously in the Pro Tour, you see them all the time.
Sure.
Hands down, the biggest rules update, it was listed as minor. I consider it more in the medium to major category, is a modification to 813.01. And this is the illegal modification rule. This rule clarifies that you cannot intentionally modify a disc, right? I can't go on and break a disc in half and then throw the other half because it's smaller, right? So the clarification here is, if you think of a disc like the Blowfly, which is bendable and can be balled up, right? There was some people would ball these Blowflies up and throw them like a baseball. And obviously that made the disc smaller. It made it easier to escape a bad lie. It removed a lot of the skill, and there was some debate about whether this should be allowed. Absolutely, it should not, right? I mean, this is integrity of the game here, right? 813.01, it never allowed it. but now it does clarify that that this is not allowed. You cannot ball up a disc that is able to be modified in that manner and throw it. I feel it's a great update to protect the integrity of the game.
So it basically is saying it needs to retain its disc-like shape, its flat, circular-like shape.
Correct. I mean, there's a difference between you throwing a disc and, you know, the modification of a disc is allowed when it happens through the course of a play, right? If I throw a disc and it all of a sudden it's got a little, gets hit, hits a tree,
chunk out of it or something.
That happens in the course of the play. That's different than intentionally doing that to gain some sort of competitive advantage.
Right. Okay. But as you say, for the most part, what we're talking about on the rules side of things for 2023, we're talking about tweaks to the phrasing of the rules to make them clearer, not changing the rule itself. It's just realizing now after some of them have been in play for a while, hey, this word would have been a better word to use in that sentence. So we're just going to strike the old word, put in the new word. Nothing fundamentally changes, blah, blah, blah. So that's on that side. What about on the competition manual side where, to your point, those are where the main focus of changes are for an odd numbered year that we're going into?
Yeah, we got quite a few to really dive into that are important. The first one that I really outlined was 1.03, withdrawals and refunds. These new sections of this rule do clarify both player and TD's rights and responsibilities regarding refunds if an event is canceled or postponed.
I see.
You know, I heard this brilliant business podcast around COVID, and it said, you know, COVID did not create problems for businesses, exposed them. And, you know, cancellation and postponing of events was really not anything we even considered in disc golf. And then COVID, it was every weekend, right?
Right.
So this was really born off of that. So if an event to be canceled, the rule does now say that a TD must provide 100% refund and not a player package. So there was some confusion around that where, you know, you could get into all kind of stuff with TDs trying to be shady. This is really trying to protect the player. Now there's always the what if questions, right? So what if something absolutely bonkers happens, right? Like the blizzard we just saw in Buffalo. So the TD can only provide a player package in the case of a disaster that is beyond the control of the TD that prevents the event from taking place at the venue and with the approval of the PDGA director of event support, which we all know is Andrew Big Dog Sweeten. You know, this protects players from a TD that cancels an event for a number of reasons, right? Player packages are awesome, but sometimes we just need our money back, right? And
right.
But then if we do have that crazy snowstorm where we clearly cannot play disc golf, the TD shouldn't also be stuck with $2,000 of disc for their event they can't get rid of. So this does kind of allow that middle ground solution. You know, whenever an event is canceled, I think the most obvious reaction is we'll just reschedule the event. And that only works if the players can do that, right? We all understand that someone may be available weekend X, but not next weekend. So this does allow that TD that chance to, if they do decide to reschedule the event. Section K does talk about if an event is rescheduled, that the player does have the right to request that refund. And if so, the player, the TD is required to provide that, right? So if I'm supposed to play this weekend and I got to work next weekend and the event gets canceled or postponed for some reason, I'm protected in that situation. And, but again, if it's a natural disaster like the Buffalo snowstorm, we go back to the same kind of concept. The TD has to talk to the director of event support and then can provide a player package if that player is unable to attend the event. A fantastic update from the competition committee to protect the TDs and players. Also found within 1.03 is a very little minor clarification in Section E that I found to be very important. Currently, if your event is full, is not full, and you withdraw within 14 days of that event, you're only obligated to receive a 25% refund or a player package. If someone's on the wait list and your spot can be returned or refilled, I should say, you do get a refund. This is not different. What is different is it is a clarification that there has to be a wait list at the time of the withdrawal. So let's use an example because I have dealt with this. Let's say that an event is full with no wait list. Player A, we'll use you, Grant. Grant, you decide I'm going to drop out of the event 7 days out. Well, we're within 14 days, and you, I cannot fill your spot. you're only obligated to receive a 25% refund or a player pack at my discretion as a tournament director. So now we're down to one spot, and then two people join the event. Now we do have a wait list. And then Grant, you come back and say, whoa, 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 whoa. I got a refund because now you have a wait list. So this rule does clarify that it is when you withdraw, not if there's a wait list at some point. TDs cannot control timing. It's one of these logical but very important updates.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. And TDs are putting a lot on the line, too. So I like the way you're phrasing this, how it's sort of protecting both parties. We're providing some protection for the players, of course. We're providing some protection for the TDs, mitigating the risks that they take in order to put these events on. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and the next update is something that that I felt was really important. 1.05 does clarify that at least two scorecards must be provided. The original language said just two. Well, as many people can keep score as one, right? PDJ Digital Scoring has the ability to do this. We as marshals encourage every single player to keep score. That's not a major update, but that is really critical. And I always want to push PDJ Digital Scoring and the ability for it to have as many people score as possible. The big update is a situation that we actually dealt with on tour this year as marshals. It does say that each member of the group should be given the opportunity to examine the scorecard, and each member of the group must agree on an official scorecard and then submit it. And if you played a tournament before digital scoring, You remember the ceremony that you would have at the end of the round near whatever your 18th basket was. There might be hole sevens, right? Who knows, right? And we'd pass the scorecard around, and sometimes people would initial it, sometimes people wouldn't. And then the guy who just shot the worst round of his life is like, whatever, I don't care. You know, there was like this whole ceremony, yeah. Right? Well, digital scoring, if you think about it, it kind of got away from that, right? Because if you didn't have your phone and you weren't one of the scorers, this process didn't happen. And people that wanted to review the score were either intentionally or unintentionally not able to because, oh, I hit submit. Oh, my goodness. I'm so sorry. Right. This rule now clarifies that the scorecard is not official until everyone has had the chance to review it. This is absolutely one of those spirit of the game situations, a fairness thing. This is a fantastic update. And I even like that the competition committee stated that if I refuse somebody the right as a player to do this, then I receive a two-throw penalty. A fantastic update to scoring. One of the biggest updates that I feel, this is really going to come into play for Elite Series and Majors. You probably won't deal with this very much at your local tournaments, but a huge update on the Elite side is when we have a tee time round, it basically, the rule says that when tournament rounds are in progress at a course, that course is unavailable for practice unless the tournament director specifies otherwise. If you want to practice, the rule says that it has to be in any area designated by the tournament director. As a tournament director, I absolutely love this update. I personally do not think it's fair that somebody that happened to draw an earlier tee time has the ability to go out, right? We've all had rounds at 9 a.m. where you get out there and maybe hole 14 through 18 is free and I can go practice the course, right? And then somebody at 1 o'clock doesn't have that opportunity. And this has been a super gray area. We actually had a situation at the MVP Open this year where this actually happened. You know, if you recall, if you go back to that tournament day one, we had horrible weather. Grant, I know you were there. You remember all this.
Yep.
And
oh boy,
it was horrible. And we had to make the decision to cancel the men's play just to get the women through the day. And some of the men wanted to practice. And there was this confusion, and speaking candidly, even amongst PDJ staff, we're like, I don't really know. And there was this obscure wording that said that practice was allowed as long as the group didn't distract players on the course. That is super gray. What is distracting to one person is not distracting to another. This fits very similar to that's removed. And that fits very similar to how the time rule changed last year, where we're getting rid of gray areas with distractions. And it's a great update. And I love the fact that we're giving the TDs the option, the what if scenarios, right? The MVP Open scenario. You know what? This is a weird situation. Man, if you want to practice, go ahead. But then the tournament director does reserve that right. But your normal run of the mill tournaments that you're going to see week to week, if you have that first tee time, you got to practice in the same area everybody else has. Big standing ovation to the competition committee for coming up with that.
Yeah, and I love it. I mean, we're talking about a sport that is done outside. There's a lot of variables. The sport sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? It evolves over the years, just like every other major sport. And that's why we are not the only sport, of course, that updates rules periodically. So this is a great example of looking at a specific situation and saying something needs to be committed to paper here to make this a little bit more concrete. You know, cause I'm sure it's happened a lot of times before, but you know, it happens on a big stage and you go, okay, yeah, let's put pen to paper here.
Yep.
And I like that. That's great.
Yeah, the really big one I've intentionally skipped over. So if you're following along your rule book here, or the article, you
I'm sure all of our listeners now are taking notes.
Both of them are just getting ready to get upset because I'm not following along.
Both of those listeners.
No, both of the people following along, I should say.
Yeah.
Four very quick minor things. 1.06, a logical update. If you do have tee times, you got to publish them on the PDGA event page. Can't use Facebook, can't use your club's website, UDisc, all kinds of things, right?
There you go.
A centralized place where players know. And this is actually pretty important. They must be publicized 12 hours prior to the first tee for that division or 1 hour after the conclusion of the play, whichever's later. Nobody wants to find out at midnight they're teeing at 8 a.m., right? This rule,
exactly.
This rule now helps that.
1.14
clarifies that if you are under 13, you can be with your parent and act as a caddy at a league. You know, let's just address the elephant in the room. We know what happened at the Champions Cup this year. This is another logical update, where it's a league. It's supposed to be fun.
At a league.
Bring your kids, right? But it is the two important things for this is A, it is only league play, and B, you are still subject to that child's behavior under courtesy warnings. 3.04, minor update to the dress code. It does remove all the gender pronouns. The dress code now basically approves outfits as opposed to what men and women can or cannot wear. 3.08 does now say that to be a tournament director, you must be 18 years of old. There's legal implications, tax implications, just one of these like super common sense updates. But now the biggest absolute most important change, in my opinion, is 2.01.
Saving the best for last.
That's right. All right. That was an impressive tongue drum roll. I'm jealous. All right. So 2.01C is completely new, right? And anytime that we're not changing language, we're literally adding language. We really got to pay attention. So,
okay.
So it says after the end, and I will say this before, if there's anything that will affect our everyday 5 to 6 tournament a year PDGA member, this is the one.
Got it.
After the close of registration, players may not request to change their division unless their division has 3 or fewer people, in which case players must request a change prior to the start of competition. TDs may approve or deny this request at their sole discretion. And then it does clarify that a tournament director may limit the divisions they wish to offer an event by listing those divisions on the registration form, and only those divisions. If a division is offered and at least 4 players do register for that division must be held. If fewer than 4 players register for an offered division, or a division does not have 4 eligible players at the close of registration, it's the TD's discretion whether to hold that division, and the tournament directors are strongly encouraged to offer divisions for otherwise underserved divisions. So there's a lot to unpack here. So part one, player changing divisions, right? Players change divisions all the time for a myriad of reasons, right? We've all heard these. Oh, I need to be in the B pool because that's my friend that I rode with. I need to go from MA3 to MA2, right? Oh, I don't like this course, or I don't like the tees that MA3's playing. Put me in MA2, right? I thought I was ready to play MA1. I got my butt whipped last weekend. Put me back in MA2, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying these aren't logical things, and I'm not saying these aren't things that I've done, or haven't done, I should say. I'm just pointing out for a TD, this can cause a lot of issues, right? Imagine if this happened 10 times and all of a sudden a division is gone, right? You just spent $150 for trophies that are now useless. I have sitting on my desk right now, and I'm going to hold it up. You can prove. I've got a trophy sitting right here from a tournament I ran, second place, just sitting here because, you know, this happened, right? And so this is a very logical update that does protect our tournament directors. And it goes beyond the fiscal components. Our rules say that if you want to mix divisions, have multiple divisions playing in the same group, it can only be the first round of a C tier. So if you're ever in a B tier or higher or the second round of an event or later, you cannot mix divisions. So let's say, Grant, let's say you change from MA2 to MA1 and I've already placed your group. Now I have to go in behind the scenes and change your groups around. And maybe that means changing tee times around. And now we get into the 12-hour tee time rule. It gets muddy in a hurry. And the crucial part of this is once registration closes, right? And players really need to understand that when they're deciding what division to play. I'm eligible for MP40 for the first time in 2023. So this is, you know, I'm personally going to have division options I've never had before. So this is something even I'm going to have to pay attention to. So really pay attention to those dates. And just what I love about this is all of the what if and the crazy scenarios, just like our practice rule, the tournament director has the ability to approve a division change after that as well. The next part of this is TDs limiting divisions. This has always been a big question. Can a tournament director not offer a division? Well, I can tell you they've always been able to. Now there's no doubt. This clarification absolutely says, and a tournament director, if they choose, and I'm stressing that word, chooses to open a division and four or more people, then they cannot cancel it, right? And this is really going to affect a lot of our age-protected members. Let's say that a real-life example is, let's say that I'm a tournament director and I know I'm going to have fivesomes, and I offer MA50 and MA55, and I get some numbers that are not divisible by five, right? Let's say I get six MA50s and four MA55s. In the past, it might have been logical just to be like, you know what? All of these people are eligible for MA50. And 10 people makes way more sense than six and four. I could do two groups of five. I'm going to remove MA55, force all those people to play MA50. This was previously, I'm not going to say allowed, I'm going to say frowned upon, but this is an update to protect our players and to ensure that they are playing in the division that they want. And I can confirm as a member of the competition committee, there's been a lot of discussion about underserved divisions. The full description of underserved divisions can be found in 1.02C2C. That's a mouthful. But you know, the underserved divisions are divisions that you typically don't see at normal PDGA events unless you're at like a major, right? MJ10, you know, MA70, right? You don't see these at your local C tiers. So the competition committee thought about requiring those to be offered, but at the end of the day, we don't want to require a TD to do stuff like that. But this does say that the PDGA strongly encourages that for equitable competition, fun for everybody. But the main thing here is if you're a tournament director, if you offer those divisions, if you just go on Disc Golf Scene and you check every box when you're sanctioning your tournament and you're setting up your registration and four or more people do it, that division by rule has to happen. Mm-hmm. And it also says that if you have less than three, then the players can say, you know what? I don't want to play in a division of two. So at this point, we are going to exercise our right to change. That's a great move for competition. But then at the end of the day, there is no minimum division size, which this rule also clarifies. So if you and your friend want to play MA70 and you're fine with playing with two people, this rule clarifies that. Outstanding work by our competition committee here to not only protect our tournament directors and our players, but another great move for equitable competition that everyone can have fun.
Nice.
That's it.
You're right. That's probably the one that people are most likely to encounter, especially those that, because of their age or whatnot, could choose from between a couple of different divisions. That makes a lot of sense. Clarifies what the TD can also do. Basically, it sounds like what you're saying is the TD can decide ahead of time to only offer certain divisions. They can't go back after the fact because they don't like what they're seeing in terms of registration and then change stuff. So they need to make that decision at the outset. If I'll use your like MA55 example, you know, if they just want to keep it at round numbers, MA50, MA60, they can choose to do that ahead of time. They can't go back after the fact and start eliminating 55s and stuff like that if there are enough players, of course. So
correct.
You know, makes a lot of sense.
My big advice here as we close out is if you're a tournament director, you know, really pay attention to your budget, you know, when you're running these events, because, you know, you could quickly have 10 or 15 divisions and not want that. And then your trophy costs could get kind of high. And
you're right.
You know, and so really make sure that you're paying attention to this. And if you're ever running a tournament and you're running into a question and you're not sure, reach out to our event support team. Those guys are and gals are absolutely the most valuable resource in our entire organization. And you can email them at any point, eventsupport@pdj.com. There's a phone number, I don't know off the top of my head. They're on call on the weekends. You know, if you don't understand any of this, have a question, even if you're just trying to set disc golf scene up and you're not sure what's going on, event support under the direction of Big Dog, an incredible team. And I can't say enough, the most valuable resource that our organization provides.
That's Robert Leonard. He will be back because I promise there will be more rules questions in the future. Sometimes they might be brought up by you, the listener. Sometimes we might all see something on coverage and we might all need some clarification. Robert has graciously volunteered to provide some of that for us in the future. So thanks, Robert, for getting us off on the right foot for 2023.
Absolutely.
Well, as we wrap this episode up one more time, I want to thank Robert Leonard, my coworker, Jennifer, somebody that you see on the road all the time as part of the event support team at the PDGA. And we're going to be seeing Robert in person very, very shortly because this season is ramping up.
Yeah, starting extremely quick for me. That actually means this week. So
yeah, A tier coming up for you.
Absolutely. I start it, kick it off here in Arizona for a couple of big events before we head up to Vegas.
Things are just now warming up on PDGA Radio. Thanks for coming along with us for the ride into 2023. We'll see you next time.
Bye.